many nerds, comedy nerds is what I like. Been Dustin and Dan, Dustin and Dan are on the mic. They interview, cause they got guests and they will school you about comedy, comedy, ha, 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 ha. Comedy nerds, I wanna know all what they know. This is a comedy, comedy nerd show. Comedy, comedy, ha, ha, nerd, ha, ha. What's so funny, what's so funny, they tell you so. Ha, 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 nerds.
Did you miss us? Cause we're back. What's up, everybody? It's the Comedy Nerds. I'm Dan McInerney.
I'm Dusty Dado.
And Dustin, we have a guest this week.
Yes, we do.
Please tell everyone at home who our guest is.
Livia Scott, how you doing?
Hi, I'm great. That song was really neat.
Oh, thank you.
I like that.
Thank you. A good friend of ours, Shayna Firm, wrote that for us.
That's why I like it. She's great.
If I can do this, I don't mean to be crass, but if you're listening to this Friday morning, Shayna Firm's going to be at a comedy show that Dustin and I are hosting.
That's right.
It's a comedy nerds show called Nerding Out. So if you have me listen to this,
that's right,
Friday
at
morning,
Coco 66.
Yeah,
I already
come
know.
On down, check the website, and come down to that. All right, that part's over.
Yes.
Sorry, everyone at home, I had to do that.
So Livia is a sketch comedian, a stand-up comedian, and an actress.
Yes, but
classically trained actress.
Trained actress, not a bullshit actor, like I am,
actress.
Who's just like decided
so
I was from an actor.
You is a fire that will ascend the brightest heaven of invention.
Right.
See?
Hilarious.
Yeah, that's great.
I am also a print model.
Really?
I was the face of depression all of last year. Yeah, apparently I'm really good at looking depressed. Mm. It was for Cymbalta. And it was running in Redbook and People and like my cousin and all these different people would just like, you know, either call me or email me. I'm like, oh my God, I was at the gynecologist. There you were, your face. It was so funny because it was the first go-see I ever went on, which was that they call auditions in a print world or whatever.
I watch America's Next Top Model. You don't need to tell me about a go-see.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm glad we're all on the same page
right,
here.
I'm...
But it was the first go-see I ever went on, and they were like, look really depressed. And I did. And they took my Polaroid. And they said, okay, now look happy. And I was like this. And then they took my picture, and then I booked it. And so the first shot is me looking really depressed, sitting on the edge of a bed wearing very, very baggy pajamas. Mm. And then the after was me in, like, business casual. It's like, I'm all better now, back to work. And then, like, looking at myself in the mirror and smiling while putting on an earring. Mm. And it never ran. The after didn't run.
Okay.
So apparently I'm not convincing as a happy person.
Oh, depressed. Right. Did you get calls from people just being like, is everything all right? Is there anything you want
to
talk about?
No, but the photographer did have to stop at one point in the shoot because I was making him cry. He's like, I have to stop.
Wow.
Like, I had a whole backstory for this woman because they're shooting you for hours.
That
you
is
know?
Classical training.
It was.
Coming out.
It was. Thank you, David Mamet. I'm $13,000 in debt to NYU still.
Right. But you made a photographer cry. So
I
it was
did.
All worth it in the end.
It was. And hopefully that's a lot of other people, and they went out and bought some Balsa.
Well, that's great that you said that, you know, you had a backstory and everything for this character who was only in one picture, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because we asked you on here because you do a lot of character work.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you have a YouTube page. Which is, the page is called Live and Let Livia?
Mm-hmm. It's youtube.com/liveandletlivia. It's all one word.
And every day you do a video with a character in it.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about it?
No, why don't I tell about it? Clearly I know much
okay,
more.
Yeah,
no,
you
okay,
probably
fine.
Do.
All right, fine. Well, Livia, talk about it.
Well, it's called Live and Let Livia, and it's on both YouTube and Facebook. I'm sort of cross-broadcasting, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And
Simulcast.
Oh, thank you very much. So it's I'm doing that, and it's called Live and Let Livia, and I'm doing 365 different characters in a year with a brand new video every day. That's what it is. And each week has a different theme.
Oh, okay. That's great. Mm-hmm. What's this week's theme?
This week's theme is conspiracy theories.
Nice.
So they're either going to be the personification of a conspiracy theory. Like, what if the New World Order conspiracy theory was a person? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I get kind of abstract with it. And sometimes it'll straight, like, be up a person who has a particular conspiracy theory, or, you know, espouses a particular conspiracy theory. Like, the day that Michael Jackson died, the New York Post ran this horrible, as far as I'm concerned, cover where it just said dead on it. And so I decided to personify the New York Post.
Right.
So, like, I put on a sequin dress and had these big glasses, and I don't quite know where that came from, but it was like, that's my idea of, like, what the New York Post would be if it was a person.
Okay. You're blowing my mind. Right. You're blowing my mind.
It's, you know, it can be alternately, like, very kind of straight up and direct or abstract, I guess.
Right.
The whole concept of character.
And each of these videos, you said 30 seconds to 2.5 minutes at mm-hmm. the longest. That's a lot to pack into a short amount of time.
Yeah.
What do you think or how do you get across a lot of information about a character like that in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, well, no, I was going to say, like, part of the reason, along with Dan's question, part of the reason that I specifically was excited about getting you on here is because for me, characters are my kryptonite. I cannot create a character. When I'm writing, when I'm acting, I just can't do it. Even when, like, I'm doing improv, I have two characters. I've said this before. I have two characters. I have me and me smoking. and you can tell the difference because I'm holding a cigarette.
Right.
Uh-huh. Like, that, you know, so, like, as soon as somebody says, hey, you should write more character stuff, I'm like, great. I'm going to go because I'm not the right person for you. Mm. So for a person like me, how do you even start? I mean, it's 365 characters. Right. You're coming. How do you, like, wake up in the morning and go, boom, I got this one?
Yeah.
Well, I don't decide, like, in the morning or anything like that. It's just I have the entire day. As long as the video is uploaded by midnight, I've done it.
Right.
So so there isn't that pressure attached to it. Okay. Like, what am I gonna do today? You know. For example, today I haven't done it. I've been busy with other things, but I know that, you know, something is either going to occur to me or I'm going to have to stop whatever it is that I'm doing to focus on this. And I guess that's part of the fun of it, which is that different ideas for characters can you know, happen anywhere. And for example, the day that I did the New York Post one, I was going to do another. The first week I did The Real Housewives of New Jersey, and I was all set to do this one woman. But then all this stuff was happening with Michael Jackson, and I was like, oh, fuck it. You know, I'm going to do something else because this is what's exciting to me right now. Yeah. So in terms of developing a character, for me, like, I could look at that bottle of Snapple that's on the buy Snapple, die Snapple. You know,
we'll
on
post
the
picture online. That would be
more. You don't know what Snapple looks like.
And I'm inspired, you know, in a lot of different ways. It could be the CEO of Snapple. I could be the personification of a peach. I could be a woman named Peaches. And so where does that go? Is it like a woman that totally sounds exactly like that? Like, hi, my name's Peaches and I'm from Georgia. Or the exact opposite, which is a woman who's really awful, but she was given the name Peaches. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, which I think is kind of funnier. So they can just sort of, like, kind of come from anywhere. And maybe one of the reasons why characters, I wonder for you, if one of the reasons why it seems kind of daunting is because, you know, we do have these notions about, like, what character is.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to do it without overthinking it.
Well, I think that perhaps you're confusing overthinking it with thinking it, you know? Like, okay. Like, I think just coming from a rich place, you know, of, like, who is this person? What's their point of view? What do they want? What are they afraid of? You know, what gets them excited? Like, that's just five things I can think off the top of my head that you can put in a person and they would be much more interesting. But overthinking it would be like having a whole backstory for this person and all, you know, like, I don't think that it's necessary to do that with this kind of project or with improv or something that's very quick and immediate. You know, if you're going to be in a film, hopefully you really are coming from an even richer place. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Also, the way that I approach characters, and I put this to you as well in terms of, I don't know, playing with characters and shaping them, if that's something that's interesting to you, is that the way I approach it is it's pretty much entirely physical.
Okay.
That the way a person holds themselves, the way their voice is, there are different rhythms to a person. If you're like kind of a person who moves very fluidly, or you're very staccato, like just going like this is going to change how you feel physically. And then that actually you're creating a very, very full person without thinking about it at all. Right. It's very interesting because you are who you are. But if you were you on crack, you'd be a different person. And you can physically alter yourself so that you are creating similar physical manifestations of that. Or if you were really, really tired, you know? So that's also a way of creating a character. And in my opinion, that's a better way of creating a character than like creating a big, long backstory, because then you're in your head and you're intellectualizing as opposed to inhabiting a person. Okay. It's a lot, I know.
No.
But it's
yeah, no, we're gonna charge $25 for this one because I feel like this one is a lesson.
Right. Well, I also
no, I mean that in a positive, like, you know, I feel like we can charge this one because I feel like Libby is giving us.
Yeah.
Like if I were to say to you, just talk entirely completely out of your nose, or you know, like that, you know, or just talk faster, just be like, you would in effect be creating a character, and you probably be able to maintain it better. You say that you drop characters, you know, you lose the accent or whatever. That's probably because you're kind of in your head about it, as opposed to making a physical choice that you can actually. You're able to sustain something like that longer.
That's all fantastic. I was just wishing the audience at home could see, because Livia is doing some amazing hand motions.
I talk a lot with my hands.
No, it was absolutely wonderful. In fact, I found it mesmerizing.
Okay.
I wish we had some sort of video, because when you said inhabited, you did this like wave motion thing.
I did, didn't I?
That is the perfect, showing of inhabiting the way you moved your hands was fantastic. Well, for one thing, you seem to have a very natural ability that, like, you know, you take one little grain of something and it just immediately seems like it's very fertile soil, like immediately starts growing into something else. I do write character stuff and do character stuff, but I'm more of like, I think my brain works like I've said, I don't do so much characters as like I like to create worlds. Like when I was first learning improv, the biggest thing that jumped right out at me was like the rule of like, well, if this is true, what else is true? And that just clicked in my brain. It's just like, oh yeah, that's what I like to do. So I love like, you know, like asking a what if question, like, well, what if everyone in the world is like this? And then seeing like what that world would be like with that, with that one thing change influence. And for me, that's like very fertile ground. Like most of the stuff I write is like that. So obviously for you, character stuff comes very easily. But what was the question I was going to ask?
I never know.
Okay.
I'm bored. Where's the question?
Sorry. I don't know. So when I'm writing like... if I'm writing a character sketch, like if I'm writing one of those what if sketches, I usually basically sit at the computer and just kind of type and, you know, everything's fine. But when I'm writing a character sketch, and exactly what, like you were saying, I usually find that I get up and walk around the room. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually doing something physical, or I'm just trying to think, like, what is that person like? Mm-hmm. Do you ever do, like, is it different to do the kind of videos that you're doing as opposed to, like, interacting with other people? Or is it basically the same skill, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because when I'm writing a script, I really have to do the same thing. Like I have to talk as the person.
Right.
And then, you know, it's not really a literary process for me. It's kind of a vocal process. It's an acting out. And then, you know, my character will say something that I think is funny and then I'll write it down. I can't think of a I can think of a concept and then construct it, but it really is, it's more like the stream of consciousness thing I was doing with the Snapple, which is I have to kind of talk it out.
Right.
So it is kind of similar, actually. It's different, but it's similar. With the videos I'm doing, they're mostly just to me and a camera, you know, and I, for the most part, I'm holding the camera myself or I'm by myself. And so it is that kind of process of being alone in an apartment and walking around, but I just happen to be like sitting and the camera's on me. And then I'll do multiple takes and figure out what I like and go back and stuff. But again, it is very much a stream of consciousness kind of thing. And then when I have other people with me, then it's kind of different because if I have a friend filming me, like they'll laugh at something that I do and I'm like, okay, then I definitely want to keep that. Or I'll ham it up a little bit for that person just to see if they're going to get the kind of reaction that I'm kind of hoping I can get from them. And then if they don't react at all, then I'm challenged again to try something else, you know? And that's kind of fun. So it can be an interacting with somebody else with one of the videos, even though I'm talking just to the camera, technically. But one of the videos, I think one of my favorite videos that I did was the week two, I did characters inspired by the music of Michael Jackson. So I did Dirty Diana and I was in a car with my friend and she's driving and I'm actually talking to her and kind of myself in the car. And so the interaction of that was actually kind of more like a scene, right. You know? And even though I don't have anybody else in the videos, like I can't, that's part of the construction of this. I'm still interacting with someone else. And that's something that I'd like to play with more because while it can be, you know, interesting to be in your apartment and walking around and something comes out and you figure it out, or you're doing that in front of a camera, it is on some level much more exciting if you have an actual person that you're working off of.
Well, and imagine too, if you have someone else there, they may ask a question or say something you weren't expecting. And now as that character, you immediately have to find an answer for it. You know what I mean? Which might send you in a direction you were not expecting.
Yeah, and that's great. Yeah. I mean, then you're really, then it's really about the person. It's about the character as opposed to the concept or any kind of preconceived notion you have about what it is that you're going to do. It is definitely a slice of life in this person's reality.
Right. See, I find that I tend to be harder on character-based sketch comedy or character-based stuff. I don't know. I feel like I always end up expecting more out of it, you know, because like when it's a premise-based sketch, then I, you know, I see where the premise is and I decide whether or not I like it or not, you know, and figure out, like, is it trying to say something cool or is it just, you know, whatever. Where with character stuff, most of the time I think people just stop at, that's an interesting, or that's a character I've never seen before, or that's a character I probably have seen before and the person should have thought more about their character. But usually when somebody presents me with a character sketch, I always... You know, like when I was directing sketch, I would always kick it back if I didn't think that the character was, I guess I want to say tragic. You know what I mean? Like, maybe tragic's not the right word, but like, but had that other side that you were seeing, that you weren't seeing, like that was dual layered, you know? And that's not something that I require from other stuff. But like character stuff, if it's just a character up there doing something weird, if it's just Stuart from Mad TV, I'm just like, all right, that happened.
Yes, right. And?
Like, I want to see why Stuart is, for me, and I know that I'm the opposite because he's their most successful character, but for me, Stuart is just like some dude, you know, who's a little weird, and it doesn't, I'm not as impressed by that as I am by some
Nor
other
should
stuff.
You be. I mean, like, I think that guy is great, but like I think that he's probably, I can't remember the name of that particular character actor.
I want to say Michael McDonald, but I don't know if that's the musician.
I think it might be something like that. but I don't, yeah. I don't know.
He's listening to this right now. I'm crying.
Let's call him Stevie Mad TV.
His name is Stevie Nicks. Anyway, I think that guy is really great, but Mad TV is a particular construction, and so you're seeing him in a very limited context. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's just really about the punchline, and this is comedy for stupid people, you know? Like, no offense to Mad TV fans, but, you know, I mean, there really are two different kinds of comedy. I'm quoting Todd Hanson from The Onion here. Do you know him and his work and stuff?
I know The Onion very well.
Okay. Well, he's been with The Onion, like, from the beginning, and for a long time he was the head writer, and he's still with The Onion, and I saw him interviewed, and he said something that I thought was really brilliant. He said that there are two kinds of comedy audiences. There are people who want to be intellectually stimulated and challenged and learn something new, and then people who just, like, want to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And the Mad TV Stewart thing is about, I just want to have a good time. And that same guy who, like, I can't remember his name, but he's on TBS and he's doing all these different characters.
Frank Caliendo?
I think that's who it is.
Yeah.
There isn't really anything deep about what he's doing. There isn't anything intellectual about it. It's just, look what I can do. I'm a dog. This is what I do when I'm making fun of people. These gestures. But, like, it's really, like, kind of jumping through hoops and tricks. And, you know, that's essentially what it is. So, I mean, I think that perhaps what you're touching on is, and one of the reasons maybe why you're drawn to more concept-based stuff, is that you like the challenge. You want to be stimulated in some kind of way, not just blithely entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a character is really just, I don't know, like, kind of an exercise in some sort of, like, masturbation for attention, you know,
mm-hmm.
Then I think I'm on the same page, like, I'm not impressed. I expect more from character stuff.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think character stuff can actually be the deepest, you know, stuff. The stuff that can be funny and also, like, make you feel something on top of it. Now, yes, with something like Stewart, it can also just be a catchphrase delivery system. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't need to... But
it's like a wind-up toy or like a Homer Simpson, you know, beer opener, you know, or whatever.
Is there a place where you can find those more complex characters?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God,
I mean, I'm not...
The first thing that comes to my mind with that idea is the kids in the hall had the most... One of my favorite sketches of all time was the businessman sketch. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
When it's like, taxi, and there was, you know, they were really exploring this whole world of, like, what these men are, and they were sending them up, and, like, you know, throughout the Kids in the Hall stuff, they're very sort of wary or they how do I phrase it? The world of business, corporate world, is something that they felt very. Was very threatening, but there was an affection to it also, and there's sort of a humanity to it. And then the little boy, Bruce McCulloch, is, you know, crying at the end because the businessman has to go away, and he's like, it's real. He's not fake crying. Right. It's so real. And, like, the wind is blowing in his face. It's just, like, it's heartbreaking. And because it's heartbreaking, it's so funny. And then and the way Kevin McDonald does the businessman, and the way Scott Thompson does the mother, and she really genuinely loves her son, and then she gives him the cooked oatmeal at the end. She's like, I got something for you. And he's like, oh, cooked oatmeal. And then he puts it on his shoulder and pets it. And it's, like, you know, it's falling down his shoulders. And and Scott Thompson is looking at her son so lovingly. It's just complete. It's completely complete. It is a completely honest, interesting, original, and exciting exploration of what the corporate world is and the dangers of it, along with these lovely characters and this humanity and this kind of, like, love too. So that's what I think of. The first thing that pops in my head when I think of, like, a great character-based sketch, but it was, I don't know if it was based. I mean, the concept, I think, came first. But it, you know, what, yeah. what about you?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's funny you say that because the first thing that popped in my head was Kids in the Hall.
Which sketch?
For character stuff. Well, there's a character they did a few times that Bruce McCullough played. It was this teenager called Bob, who was like a rebellious teenager. But there's one sketch in particular where he runs away from home and like and goes, like, sees his girlfriend and does all this stuff. And as I just remember it being, I was like 18 at the time, and I considered myself to be something of a rebellious young man mm-hmm. who was going to break down society and show it for what it really was. And it was one of the first times I was just like, oh, wow, that's kind of me. Because then, of course, he's like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to change the world. Then he goes to his girlfriend's house, gets drunk, and then, you know, winds up on the front stoop of his house, and the mom comes out, you know, right. and lets him inside, and, you know, and he's like, you know, I'm gonna change the world. And she's like, yeah, yeah, and he puts in bed or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was something, the first time I was like, I was laughing, but at the same time, I was just like, wow, they got my number. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would always be like, I'm gonna change the world, and I would go and get drunk and, like, kind of forget about the actual changing the world
it's,
part.
It's that perfect blend of a concept, you know, and a right. specific, yeah. like, social point.
But, and as you know, funny as it was, yeah. unlike Stewart or something, it felt real. It felt like mm-hmm. these were real people, and these were people that either I knew or mm-hmm. in that particular case was someone that I was, you know, mm-hmm. I saw a lot of myself in that. So that, you know, that's something again where you could feel like you could probably follow these people for a long time, mm-hmm. you know, and they would kind of grow and change, you would see stuff, but there'd be so much in those little things as opposed to like Stewart doesn't really exist in the real world. Like the moment that sketch ends, you don't imagine him like going on, mm-hmm. you know, to other stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. you know, it's just, and the world is perfectly constructed around him mm-hmm. to do his thing as
his
opposed to like,
catchphrase thing.
Yeah. As opposed to having like living, breathing characters who are in like some sort of a real world.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break now.
Mm-hmm.
We have we're getting a visit from our pal Lou Fernandez.
Yep.
From over at loureads.com.
Ooh, Lou Reed's going to be here?
Yes. and he'll be reading to us, as he always does, from an awful, awful forum.
Yeah.
And this time it is about the Rapture.
Oh, about that Blondie song. I love that.
No, about,
about
God calling all the righteous people up to heaven and everyone else fighting Satan.
So not the Blondie song.
No.
Okay, good.
Is that what the Blondie song is about?
I think it's about an alien that eats cars, but it could be the same. It's kind of a similar idea, so.
All right, well, either way, he's going to read about some sort of rapture.
All right, cool.
I've been worried lately about my dogs. If we are raptured and I'm not home, we'd all be gone, and my dogs would be stuck in their crates at home, only to experience a slow death. I have been praying lately that if the rapture happens when my pups are still alive, that Jesus would remember them and take them too. There's nothing in Scripture to say that animals will come with us. I told my husband the other day that if we hear trumpets and we are at home, I'm grabbing the baby and one of the dogs, and he can grab the other one, so hopefully they'll come with us. Anyone ever think of these things? In a different thread, in the Rapture Ready Men's subforum, Warrior of the Father writes in a thread he entitled, Video Games. Here's a dumb question, but do you think we will still enjoy video games in heaven like we did here? At all or no? I'm quite the gamer, and I was brought up playing video games. Kinda dorky, but hey, that's me. So do you think we'll still be able to play games? Or do you think we'll be limited to certain games, since most of the games today involve killing something or somebody in a game? Dave replies, I love video games too. I have been playing them ever since the Intellivision back in the early 80s when I was a kid. I don't see myself playing them in heaven, though. I mostly see myself exploring beautiful scenery. I really have no clue. LOL.
All right, and we're back. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Olivia. So during the break, well, we left talking about the Kids in the Hall, mm-hmm. which is a good jumping off point for my next question to you, which was, do you ever play Men?
I love playing Men.
Okay.
I love it, love it, love it. Yes, I do it. I do it frequently. Yeah.
Playing women is something I have a lot of trouble with. And mm-hmm. I don't know, first of all, maybe I'm just too manly, which is possible.
You're pretty manly.
But second of all, I just...
You're wearing plaid, and you have a beard.
Yeah.
That's so, two strikes.
Yeah, the goatee.
Unless you're playing a lesbian.
Right. but that's the thing. I feel like a lot of women very easily play men. It doesn't often go the other way. Now, The Kids in the Hall are a perfect example of them doing it, a great job of it.
The best.
And I honestly don't, much like Dustin, just doing characters in general, I don't know what my problem is. But whenever I try to do it, it just doesn't seem to work. Mm-hmm. I'm just not good at it. Like, I always feel like I'm doing it jokey, no matter how hard I try not to. I feel like I'm, you know, doing like a Monty Python-esque kind
of... I've always had the problem of, like, I've had teachers say, if you are going to play a woman, don't do the voice. Just sort of, like, lighten it up a little bit, don't do the voice. But everything in society has told me to do the voice.
Right.
Like, everything I've ever seen says, do the voice, do the girl voice.
Well, what is the girl voice? Can you do it for me?
No.
Why not?
You know, it's just sort of talking about...
But no woman sounds like that.
I know, but then I don't know. I don't know how
to... I don't sound... Hi, guys. I'm Livia Scott. Hi.
No, you're totally...
I'm a woman.
I don't know. If you heard yourself on tape, that pretty much what exactly what you sound like. You sound different in your head, but right. Normally when we hear you, that's
you didn't, okay. You didn't change your voice at all, so I don't understand what that meant. No, I mean, but that's the thing. I don't know how to sound like a woman without doing that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I've tried it many times, and I just always feel like it runs out of steam. I don't know why. And I don't know if it's a fear of, like, offending somebody, you know? Because I feel like I can play, even if I'm playing a character, you know, I'm usually, you know, a white guy. Or I can play a kid or, like, an old guy. But I still, you know, I never feel like I'm stepping too far out of bounds, or I'm going to say or do something.
Like, I'm a little worried I'm going to offend smokers when I do my me smoking character.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure to do it right.
Yeah. So, I mean, so obviously you don't have a problem with it, but I mean, is it a different thing to play a man?
Well, definitely. I mean, but I think that what I would ask you with what you want to work on with that, I guess, is, I mean, first of all, I think it's great that you want to do it.
Right.
That you want to play a woman. Second, I think that it's great if you're not doing it well, that you're acknowledging that you're not doing it well and wanting to do it right.
Right.
You know? So I think
if
that...
If you ever
need,
just ask me and I will tell you when you're not doing things well. Consider that my job.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
I thought that was sounded
like
your job.
It's okay. You guys got to have your banter, your little digs. I get it. And we're allowing time for that.
Right.
no, but I think that you, the fact that, you know, you're coming at it from that place means that you probably will do it well once you just kind of, like, crack the code a little bit. And I think you have to find, what I would suggest is that you should definitely find a specific woman that you want to practice this out on, you know, with, or on, I mean, on a subject, a specific
right.
subject.
Might I suggest sound engineer?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that each one of the kids in the hall had a specific, a very specific woman they were doing.
Right.
And when I do male characters, I'm doing a very specific male character. I'm not just, like, doing a man. That would be insulting.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it wouldn't be very good.
Anyone we know?
when I do male characters, let's see. One of the male characters, I think probably if I am known or whatever for a certain... whatchamacallit, if I have a canon or, you know, a table of contents, okay? I'm sorry, I'm not being very articulate.
Yeah.
For, like, what characters I do, if anybody knows what that is and they think of a male character, probably the first one that they think of is the classy abuser, which I did in Meat. It's not part of this project, but I did it with Meat, my sketch group. And he was kind of a combination of different men from Alfred Hitchcock movies.
Mm. Could you demonstrate for us?
Well, he says, you know, a lot of it has to do with vertigo, but it's not a Jimmy Stewart impression.
Okay.
But he's, you know, he has this woman who he's trying to make over, you know. And so he's like, I want you to wear this to dinner tonight. And I want you to wear your black satin cocktail dress, the one that accentuates your voluptuous bosom. Like that. he's just sort of like a combination of different kind of villains. Actually, the subject for it is more Hitchcockian than the actual guy. The guy is, I think, some sort of nightmare of different film noir villains. Mm-hmm. But he is a specific person in my head, you know? So anyway, the point is, I think that you have to find a specific woman that you're doing and then try to do her. And to and take him. Hey, oh, zing. Right, hey, oh.
No, I'm going to take it back then. Let's not have that be sent in. I've heard you
too
not.
Late. Too late, dude. Too late.
Damn it.
Too late.
No, but you know what I mean.
Just
like,
gave him
you
the
know.
Green light.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I yeah. do. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, for one thing, a lot of my characters are very, usually over the top aggressive to a certain. Yeah, I just find that very funny. Mm-hmm. Just usually someone who's completely delusional about how great they are.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
I
for
find
whatever.
That really funny too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I feel like, I don't know, I've tried like to do women before, and I always just feel like they come off, you know, they're always just bitches or like really annoying. You know what I mean? Whereas for some reason, when a guy is like that, it doesn't bother me. But then there's a thing in the back of my head where just like, no, don't do that. Don't stop. There's always like that. That feeling of doubt.
Well, but I think part of it could be this is like I find when I'm trying to write for a female character, part of the problem that I have is that I'm afraid that like people are going to judge my view of women based on the female characters that I write.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So they're always apologetic.
And we do.
Yeah. Okay, good. so my fear is correct, and I will always be crippled by women.
Yes.
Good to know.
Just always write buddy comedies and you'll be all set. You'll have a great career. You know, I have to quote my partner in Meet and also my writing partner in our sketch duo, Dirty Jeans and Thunder Chief, Elizabeth Ellis, Biz Ellis. Whenever she has this conversation with people, she just says the most brilliant thing, which is just write for a man and then put a woman in it. Mm. You know, because we're really not that different. Like if you were to basically, I haven't seen Hangover, but if you were to construct that movie as a bachelorette party and all of these women are trying to remember what happened and you just sort of reverse the genders in a lot of ways, it might, I'm guessing, again, I haven't seen it, but it might not be that different a story or in terms of like the comedy, you know?
Right.
It's still going to be based on people being losers of one sort or another or having particular quirks or hangups or, you know, being drunk at a bachelorette party. Right. I mean, how are men and women and, you know, women go home with strange men and, you know, I mean, how is that really any different?
Okay.
But
well, it's actually interesting you say that actually for that particular movie, because there is one
thing. I love talking about movies and using them as examples that I haven't seen. It's always a good idea.
There is one thing in that movie that actually I think would be very different if it was a female cast. And if you haven't seen the movie, jump ahead a minute because I'm going to spoil a little bit. About halfway through, they discovered that, in fact, the reason why they don't remember anything is they were accidentally roofied. They took roofies.
Oh, well, then there you go.
And that's why it wiped. It's not like I said, you know, Bruce Willis was dead at the end of Sixth Sense. It doesn't ruin the movie. I'm just saying that that's what happened. Oh, by the way, he's dead at the end of the movie. But I mean, I think that's something that
actually...
That
is something that would definitely be different.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, that's you know, all of a sudden, where it's funny that a bunch of guys accidentally got roofied, it's not as funny.
Yeah, but...
Definitely not.
I mean, don't you think that if Dan plays a stupid male character, you just go, oh, that's Dan playing a stupid male character. But if he plays a stupid female character, there's inherently a little bit of, like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
You know? For, like... You know, like, women aren't that stupid. You know what I mean? Like, am I just bringing that into it?
There are stupid women in movies all the time that are portrayed affectionately and also derisively.
Right.
And there are, you know, I find it interesting. And I suppose in movies where men are stupid, it's the same. You know, I don't know, for some reason, the first thing that comes to my mind is Thelma and Louise. Her husband, Daryl, is phenomenally stupid. And, you know, he's definitely portrayed derisively, but also he's kind of an affectionate character because he's really funny. And I love that character actor, and I can't remember his name. But I think that there is a way for both men and women to portray stupid people in a way that is in some way redeeming. You still like that person even though they're stupid. And I think that if it's really more about their character traits, like, again, as we were talking about character, like, are they coming from somewhere? Is it a rich, full place, or are they just Stuart, essentially? Like, I'm the dumb chick in this.
Right.
Then that's the thing that we don't like, not the fact that the character is dumb. You know, Marilyn Monroe, like, although at the time everybody was like, yeah, she's dumb. I'm jerking off with my hands, audience. We look back.
Oh, no, they could tell that from your voice. That's
yeah. Good okay, okay, good.
You are. You're
just
like,
wanted
oh,
to make
clearly,
that clear. You know. We look back, a more sophisticated audience now, we look at this dumb blonde character, and we see that she was a redeeming character a lot of times. She was somebody that we liked. She was somebody who, even though she was dumb, she was funny. There was something very, very smart about how she was delivering the comedy. You know, so again, I think that it's wise that you understand that that's dangerous territory, but there's a way around it.
Okay.
You can, it doesn't have to be just that.
Right. No,
it's complicated. It's hard to talk about concisely for me.
I think that's a great point. It's just, you know, write a man and then just have it be a woman. Like, don't.
Yeah, again, and then if you see problems, then, you know, fix that.
Right. Obviously, there you might have to make little tweaks to fix it. But
I mean, like, we've talked before about how, like, as two white male writers, there's, like, any minority guilt.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, women aren't necessarily a minority, but I mean, like, we're calling them a minority for the sake of this, even though there's more of them than there are.
Yeah, we're definitely not a minority, but we're treated like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as a white male, you're always consciously afraid of being judged for your view on anything that's not a white male.
Right.
So, like, we end up writing them and we end up doing characters that are them because, like, the minute somebody says, like, you know, be a black guy, you're like,
no,
I am not doing that. No, thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Like, I do not need to share that with the world. Mm-hmm. I think that always for white male, that makes characters harder because as soon as they venture off, there's always that inclination to pull back.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I have played black characters before. I played them in my solo show and in one of my videos, I play a Puerto Rican, but videos from Live and Let Livia, I play a Puerto Rican girl. And then I play a black woman in one of the videos too. And I don't do blackface or anything like that. But there is a specific accent. If that character is from a specific area, you know, right. The Puerto Rican American girl that I did is from the Bronx. The African American woman that I did is from Bed-Stuy. Like, it was a very specific area and a specific way of speaking. And again, it's like, I'm going to write a dumb woman character. You have to give honor to that being a full person.
Right.
So I would never ever play a black character doing a black voice. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean? But if you're playing a specific person that's coming from a specific area, they have a specific point of view, you can do that accent. And there are certain mannerisms that come from, you know, being of a certain class, like, you know, having, you know, the corners of your mouth pulled down and being like this when you're from Connecticut is something in some way similar to an interpretation of a class of people, where if you're looking at somebody who's working class and black, they might have like specific hand gestures and, you know, things like that, you know, you have to be careful that you're not generalizing and you're not stereotyping, but you also have to be honest and look at, well, what are the cultural affectations of the, you know, these different areas? And when I was working on Goodnight OJ, where I played a couple of different black people, I was really, really nervous about, like, I would just do the characters like this, like myself, and Baron Vaughn, who's my director and is black, said, you can't do that. What exactly is it that you're afraid of? And I'm like, I'm afraid of offending people. And he said, if the character is real, if they're, again, coming from a rich place and you're not generalizing, you know, and also, again, if you're looking at a specific person, it's like the thing with Dan, you being wanting to try on the role of a woman in sketch. If you're looking at a specific person and you're like, okay, I'm adopting that specific person's mannerisms, then it can't be, you know, I'm not doing black, you know, any more than you're doing woman.
Right.
I'm doing, you know, Sheila. I'm, you know, or I'm doing Natalie or, you know, whatever. I'm not doing Puerto Rican girl.
Right. Right.
Again, specific, back to Mad TV or whatever that is.
Yeah. Yeah. So brave. So brave she is. And such pussies we are. Yeah. That we're scared to step
out
of the world.
You know, it's important to try. You know,
absolutely.
I was the same. I was just like, and he was like, nope, can't do it. You have to give this character the same respect that you would give a white character.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, like, you can't just shy away from it because you, I don't know, in some ways, you, by not going down that road, you are being racist.
Right, in a way,
I'm not
yeah.
calling you guys racist. I'm
no,
just
you
saying
just
that
called me racist.
You guys, Dustin is wearing a white hood, and I have been very uncomfortable throughout this entire interview. I've been trying to gear the conversation toward this so that I could call him a racist.
I know he says something about a skin condition, but it just doesn't seem like that's necessary to be wearing. Mm.
They're kidding. I'm going to edit this out anyway. I'm going to edit this. Not none of this is true.
No, Dustin is very, you know, he's a big tenter. He likes everybody. He doesn't exclude anyone.
Thank you.
I don't know.
I'm scared though that people might listen to what I was saying and interpret it as racist. But I guess that's also, you know, that's part of what that is too, is you're putting yourself out there for people to give you feedback.
Right.
And if people are offended by what you do, then maybe you need to reexamine what you're doing. And, you know, make sure that, you know, you're crossing all of your T's and your I's. And
okay, but in that vein, the minute you take on, like, a black character,
mm-hmm.
assuming for a moment that it's you're doing it in front of an all-black audience,
mm-hmm.
The minute you take on a black character, there's going to be a certain percentage of that audience that's immediately going to shut down and go, whoa, you're not supposed to do that. The same way it would be if Dan was a woman in front of an all-female audience, they're going to be like, listen, buddy, you don't get that option.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I'm offended that you thought you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like, you know, going in, you're going to get slapped by somebody.
Yeah. You know? I mean, first of all,
they have the right to slap you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, people have the right to dislike anything and everything that you do. And that's, you know, that's their right.
Right. Well, the funny thing is, and I would like to move off this topic just a little bit. But what is funny to me is first of all, there's always going to be just people who are assholes or whatever, and just are looking to be offended, and will find something to be offended of,
sure.
and whatever. But I have done things that are, you know, racial humor, the good kind, the examining, not the making fun of races, but talking about, you know, racial tensions or whatever. And I often found that the people who would be offended would be sort of the self-righteous, you know, white liberal audience. When we would do it in, you know, the minority group that we were sort of talking about, they would always love it. Mm-hmm. I never heard anyone walk up to us and be like, I was horribly offended by mm-hmm. that joke you made. But there were several, you know, sort of white people who walk up to me and go, you can't talk about that. You can't mm-hmm. say these things. How dare you? You're a white comedian. This is not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas we did a sketch that was pretty brutal. And I mean, I think had a very clear point of view about what we were talking about. And I think mm-hmm. it was clear that, you know, we were trying to say something. But went down a couple of dark paths before that turned around, and we did it in front of an audience that was like a good 50% black, and we were very nervous, being like, mm-hmm. what if the first time, you know, this stuff starts happening, it goes sour? And they loved it from the word go. They absolutely
good.
Loved it, because, you know, it was clear what we were trying to say, you know, and they were able to see, to see that and not, you know, immediately think like, wait a minute, that was a word that I don't like. So I'm immediately going to shut down and not mm-hmm. listen to what you're saying. So I guess my point is, you know, don't be scared, even though I'm talking about how I am yeah. scared sometimes. And, you know, and if you are coming from a real place, if mm-hmm. and if you're genuinely trying, you know,
if you're respectful of the character.
Exactly.
You know, you're trying to create a true, full person.
Right. And yeah. you can know for yourself, you know, this is what I'm trying to do and not, you mm-hmm. know. Let me ask you another question, though. So another thing I have a problem with, and this has nothing to do with fear, is certain, you know, accents. There's certain accents I can do really well that I've just sort of naturally. And there's other ones that I can't quite seem to get a grasp on. Is that mm-hmm. something that you work on, or is that something you just
I have no problem with accents. Every accent is easy for me.
All right. Well, that's a short answer.
I'm totally kidding.
Okay.
I accents are very, very easy for me, but you know, there's certain ones that are just really fucking hard, and yeah. you know, it's like.
It seems like for me, they all slip into like some sort of redneck Southern.
Okay.
No matter how, like after a few minutes, no matter how hard I try, no matter what I'm doing, I'm.
Maybe you know, it's because all they're all aggressive
I'm
characters.
Like this. Yeah, I guess so.
Does that kind of bleed over or something?
Maybe. It's hard to hold on to for mm-hmm. some reason. Almost ironically, because people actually, when they guess where I grew up, which was Long Island, New York, mm-hmm. they'll guess like all over the place. So I'm not even mm-hmm. good at like the accent of where I grew up. People yeah. are like, what, you grew up upstate? Was it Boston? Like, you sound mm-hmm. like you're from Kentucky. Like, none of these, no, you're not even close to like where I was. mm-hmm. So
I found that even though I don't do accents that much, something I called the Krista Amagon effect.
What's she was, that? Who's that?
I want to know.
She was an improv comedian. Who I was in a group with for a while. And she was prone to Southern accents.
Okay.
And she, first of all, let me say, she's
it sounds like a name that should have an effect.
Yeah.
What's her name again?
Krista Amagon.
Krista Amagon.
Yeah.
It sounds like something like Krista Amagon syndrome yeah. or yeah. effect. Or, like it's one of those things like, anyway, go ahead, please.
First of all, let me say, she was a great improviser. I had so much fun performing every time we were on stage together.
Yes.
She was prone to Southern accents.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she did them very well. I think she may have been from the South. The problem was, for some reason, and the rest of the group agreed with me, we'd all be Southern by the end of the show. Like, we'd start out talking a certain way, and she would just talk so Southern that, like, eventually you'd pick it up, and all of a sudden we were all Southern folks. And like, that's how I end up developing accents, is you do it, and then I go, okay, you know, eventually, I feel like I have to talk like you because you're there, and we must be. I can't not do it.
Right.
It's accent by osmosis.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess if I'm ever going to do a character, I have to be in a scene with somebody else who's doing the character, doing the accent that I need to be able to do.
Well, accents are very hard, and it's even if you have, you know, a proclivity to it. Is that the right word? Proclivity?
As far as I'm concerned, it is.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I just invented a word. You know, it's still something that people train to do. And I, you know, I went to NYU and I spent, you know, I had partial scholarship, whatever, but I'm still like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in debt so that I could learn how to do those accents. And that's one of the reasons why it was kind of tongue in cheek for me of like, I really don't have a problem with accents and I can pretty much do just about any one because I trained really hard and I studied really hard and I'm still paying through my ass for that training.
I'm going to do
But
state
yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, nothing. you have to train. It's not just something everybody can do.
Well, I would not love to ask you how you train, but I think we're actually going to have to wrap this up. This is the second time in a row. This is terrible. I want to keep talking, but we are out of time.
Well, after the microphone, you know, I'm out the door, and that's it.
Yeah,
I vanish.
You
into
don't
the
have
night,
to put
so.
Your coat on right now.
Yeah, bag in hand.
You keep talking,
leaning towards the door, which is very uncomfortable. But
this Libby, has been great, though. Thank you so much
for being on.
Really, really interesting.
And let everybody know again where they can find out more about you.
Yeah, well, I'm on Facebook. I think that's really the best way to find me. Become my Facebook friend. And I also have a fan page and all the videos are there. And, you know, I do have my show updates there. There's also livialand.com. That's my official website. But nice. I don't update it as much as I update my Facebook. So okay. Facebook.
I think if you just type, if you go to the new Firefox and just type Livia Scott into it, it'll bring you right to Livia Land.
Yes, it will. It will indeed. And of course, the YouTube page is Live and Let Livia.
Nice.
All right. Sounds and we'll link to all that on yeah. the site. But just, you
great.
Know.
But, you know.
In case you're listening on your iPod and you want to go right now.
You in your time. Mind.
Yes.
In your mind.
To there. Well, thank you again so much for being on.
Thank yeah. you really so fantastic. Much, Dan and Dustin. It's been great.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. And Dustin, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, and then we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we will see you next week. All right, thanks a lot. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at info@thecomedynerds.com. Check out our website at thecomedynerds.com, where you can comment on any past episodes. And if you enjoyed this show, please write a review in iTunes and tell the world how awesome we are. For Dustin and myself, thank you for listening. I'm